Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in the latest Behind the Bets podcast, Doug Kazarian. We are taping this on Thursday, November 8th, talking NFL with John Murray of the Superbook out at the Westgate in Las Vegas, and then obviously Mad Props with Mike Clay, our NFL fantasy football insider, going to get into all that. And we have a shout-out to Kate Fagan, does a great job for ESPN. Also, she and I chatted during a commercial break on Outside the Lines that we were hosting for Friday 4 a couple Fridays ago, and she had a great analogy. I'm going to run it by Murray about why coaches make these conservative decisions. So it was really creative there. We'll talk more about last week's head-scratchers. The sports books get pounded. Victory for the betting public, and then we'll also do a little bonanza where I have a sizable lead over John Murray, despite my middle attempts not coming to fruition, although I did not get burned. That's the most important thing. While they did not stick the middle, I did not get anything. I didn't have to take anything on the chin. So let's get to it.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
We may have to change that because any truth to the rumor, John, that you know, all the higher-ups have been axed following last Sunday, and you're the only man left standing?
No. You know, as bad as Sunday was, we did very well on Monday Night Football. The Titans winning outright was huge, and we really rallied on Sunday night. We did very well on the Sunday night game. The game went under the total, and we did really very well in the secondary markets. Like, we had a lot of money on the Packers team total over. We had a lot of money on the first half over. We had a lot of money on Brady over 2.5 touchdowns, and I think he finished with 1. So the Sunday night game was a good result for us, and the Monday night game was a great result for us. We actually won more money on Monday than we lost on Sunday.
Wow. But that's so, you guys. You weren't as it wasn't as right. much of a bloodbath at the Superbook on Sunday as it was other shops.
The 10 a.m. games were awful. But we did well in the afternoon. We would have done better if Denver had beat Houston in that game, but we did very well the LA Chargers and the Seahawks game. That game went under the total. That was a very good result for us. We had a lot of money on the over in that game. And the game almost went over. They called a ridiculous pass interference call to the Chargers that put the ball at the 1 yard line. And luckily, the Chargers defense held on for us there. But that would have been a very big swing for us if that had gone over the total.
I did write SD. I started to write it yesterday when talking about the Chargers, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, I called him San Diego on another radio hit a couple of days ago. It's been like 3 years. I really don't have an excuse there.
Well, just they belong in San Diego. There's our excuse.
I know,
for both
do.
Trying to do that.
They do.
Okay, a couple of things. But just so you know, not that you have the books of other books, but other books did take a bigger hit on Sunday than you guys did. You had a little bit more protection, if you will. So other books. But, yeah, look, like you mentioned, anytime the Dallas Cowboys as favorites lose outright on a Monday night football game, the house is going to do pretty well.
Absolutely true. And just because so many favorites won on Sunday, there was a lot of parlay money tied to the Cowboys. So the Titans winning that game outright was a really big result for us. And we did well in some other games that night, other hockey, basketball games. So overall, the weekend could have been a lot worse. We did very well in the Thursday night game. The 49ers beat the Raiders on Thursday night. That was a very good result for us. We had the Breeders' Cup this weekend, so we had a lot of parimutuel handle. So you know, the books will survive. Nobody should worry too much about us. We'll be okay.
But it's nice. 3 straight weeks for the public. Let's keep it up, fellas. You mentioned the Denver game. There's a lot of results to unpack. Let's start there, where Bill O'Brien got caught on camera celebrating a questionable move by his counterpart on the Denver sideline, maybe an F-bomb as well, calling him dumb. Pretty strange, but you know what? Bill O'Brien was thinking what a lot of us were watching that game.
I was certainly thinking that watching that game. I really liked Denver on Sunday. I thought they were going to come out and give a better effort at home, and probably should have been a push in that game. I thought for sure that McManus would make that 51-yard field goal to win the game in Mile High, a 51-yard field goal, very makeable. But Vance Joseph, obviously he botched the end of the first half. We all saw that. Bill O'Brien certainly saw that. He also really botched the end of the game because after they converted that 4th and 8, the pass from Case Keenum to Emmanuel Sanders, he played for that field goal, didn't try to get any closer, and it ended up costing the Broncos the game. Vance Joseph should be on the hot seat, man. He's up there right now. I think him and Jason Garrett are the two guys that should be on the hottest seats in the league now that Hugh Jackson's been fired.
They had the ball on the Houston 37-yard line with 43 seconds to go and a timeout and only got 5 yards. It wasn't for a lack of trying, they got a quick pass and then ran up the middle and lost a yard. They played for that, and like you alluded to, at the end of the first half, for those who weren't paying attention like we all were, they kicked a 60-something yarder with 18 seconds to go, missed, and that enabled Houston to have a play to get into field goal range and kick a field goal. So very
frustrating. Big swing, too, in that game. That was a really big swing. It was a 6-point swing right before they go into the locker room. So that was pretty critical. And obviously, it was a 2-point game, so... Vance Joseph never seems to push the right buttons at the end of these games.
And it's surprising because, and I say this with all kindness, if you will, but Denver has a bye this week. So I thought for sure Vance Joseph was a goner given the scheduling spot.
He probably should be. I think he would have been if they'd lost that Thursday night game to Arizona a few weeks ago. They ended up blowing the Cardinals away in that game. But he's hanging on by a thread. I certainly think Denver will move on the offseason.
We'll see. But that wasn't the only head-scratching move of the weekend. There's been a few, and we talk about it all the time. I have a question for you. And my colleague out here at ESPN, Kate Fagan, does a wonderful job in all platforms. I talked to her when we did OTL a couple weeks ago, and she had a great analogy. And she's like, it's like that sort of hostage situation where someone like holds a gun and says, get in the car. And almost all the time people get in the car because it extends their life. Whereas the smart decision, the odds on decision is to like run or not get in the car. And she feels like that's what coaches do a lot to stay in the game and extend the game. Whereas they can make a decision. It's kind of like going for it on fourth down when you have the ball in the lead instead of punting. It's like you can dictate the outcome. The odds play to your favor. Like we talked about, a decade ago when Belichick went for it on 4th and 3 with the lead against the Colts in Indianapolis on that
right move.
On that Sunday night game. So, like, the equivalent is to extend the game, stay alive, so to speak. But the staying alive really hurts your overall chances of surviving. And it was her analogy that I thought was brilliant. The bad guy and extend your life, but it's actually decreasing percentages of surviving.
You get in that car, you're going to be in the car for another 20 minutes, but you're going to get killed anyway. Right. No, I mean, that's really how these coaches look at it. They just try to extend the game, keep it a game until the very end, and then lose in the end. But I go for the jugular. They should be going for the jugular. A great example was the Seattle LA game, the LA Chargers.
Nice.
The Chargers got the ball back. I think they were up by 8. I believe it was 25-17, if I remember correctly. They recovered an onside kick. And what did Anthony Lynn do? He just plunged up the middle 3 times and then punted. And Seattle had all 3 of their timeouts. They just timeout, timeout, timeout. And then Russell Wilson got the ball back with plenty of time. And he got them all the way down to the 1-yard line. Now, that was due to a very questionable pass interference call. But why didn't Anthony Lynn go for the jugular there with Phillip Rivers? All he needed was 1 first down. And Seattle had 3 timeouts anyway. So it's not like they were going to be able to run the clock out. These coaches just get way too conservative in these situations. It almost cost Anthony Lynn on Sunday. It did cost Vance Joseph.
Well, the exact same thing happened with these aforementioned L.A. Chargers in London. When they could have iced the game against the Titans, didn't do it. Like, I'm all for asking them, getting the other team to burn its timeouts, right? That changes the complexion. You know, maybe run on 1st and 2nd down. You got to throw on 3rd. It's like 3rd and long to convert and win the game or leave them with 1 timeout and stop them. You know, it's just That's the difference. Or you can do a screen pass or a hitch, bubble screen, something that's safe, not a plow up the middle, but also keeps the clock running and forces them to use timeouts. So it is frustrating, but
it is. Put the ball in the hands of your best player. Phillip Rivers is the best player on the Chargers. He's their franchise guy. Trust him to make a throw for a first down to win the game, I think, is what you need to do there. And you brought up a great point about the Titans game. That was the one where the Chargers had a fourth and short on the Titans' side of the field, and they punted. And the Titans were back past the point of the punt within like two plays. Ended up scoring a touchdown, went for two, didn't get it. Anthony Lynn's been living dangerously. The Chargers are 6-2, but I think that's mostly because of the talent on that roster, not because of the coaching decisions.
Sean Payton, typically an aggressive coach, punted in a situation where he had the lead and it was 4th and 4 or 3 on the Rams side of the ball in a track meet of a game, right?
An 80-point game. Yeah. I mean, 80 points were scored in that game. I agree with you. I was shocked by that decision.
Again, you don't want to criticize a coach all the time, because if they tend to err on the side of aggression, maybe they knew something, maybe Breeze got his bell rung on that previous play. You know, you don't know. There are other variables out there. I want to give some deference to coaches who have demonstrated a competent ability, right? Whereas Vance Joseph, I'll criticize all day because he hasn't done well.
That's fair.
But other
coaches. Sean Payton deserves the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he's made some questionable decisions over the years, but overall, he's a very good coach. So
yeah, and he likes to go for it. We saw at the end of last year's playoff win against Carolina, he went for it at midfield. First down wins the game instead of punting back to Cam Newton, and he went for it. It was incomplete, but the defense did hold. So, but I just like that concept.
Great point.
And he was way ahead of the curve on that one.
Yeah. I completely agreed with that decision. I know it didn't work, but I thought it was absolutely the right decision. And that's a great point by you. I mean, Sean Payton, he deserves the benefit of the doubt in these situations, because he's shown over the years that he makes the right decisions most of the time.
Yeah, and the rule of thumb, right? What does the other team want you to do? They want you to punt, so you go for it.
If you got Drew Brees, they definitely want you to punt. If you have Phillip Rivers, they definitely want you to punt. If you have Nathan Peterman, they probably want you to throw the ball.
Speaking of Nathan Peterman, he actually played well last week. And it's a time where you can't look at the box score. He had 3 picks, I know. So he did end up throwing a home interception, like we were curious about.
3 home interceptions, but yeah.
But 2 of them, I think, like one of them was pass interference. The pick 6 was pass interference. I thought he played okay. And I am actually sniffing to the Bonanza. I'm actually on Buffalo, I think, later in Bonanza. I wish Sam Darnold was playing for the Jets, but I'm leaning towards Buffalo in this spot. I thought it was a horrible spot for Buffalo. But it's not like the Bears dominated the box score. They're not very good on offense.
No, and one line that really surprised me this week is the Bears are actually favored by more at home against Detroit than the Vikings were in the same game last week. The Bears are giving 6.5 points to the Lions, whereas the Vikings were giving 4.5 or 5. So the Bears' power rating is really getting pretty high. But you know what was interesting on Sunday morning? We obviously got crushed on that Kansas City-Cleveland game. It was probably our worst 10 a.m. game of the year. Mm. The Bears-Bills game wasn't that bad for us. People, I always say the public loves these road favorites, and they do, believe me, but they were in no rush to lay 10 points with the Bears, even against Peterman and the Bills.
Well, I'll tell you why. You want to know why?
Yeah, I want to know why.
The public remembers what they last saw, and they saw a very valiant... No, I'm serious. Look, there's a video of Francesa going around on Twitter that he talked about how he loved the Bills and he thinks they're going to win outright. And because he was like, I was so impressed with how they played. They gave New England everything they could. And that he was 100% right about the New England part, but that's all the more reason I thought they had nothing left in the tank. And I think that's what the common person kind of overlooks, the spot situation. And a team getting up for Monday night is not going to necessarily get up for Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears, especially when your season is already done and you have a weak quarterback. But like I said, that game could have gone a lot of different ways. I don't think the Bills would have covered, but it certainly wasn't a 41-9 sort of matchup.
That's fair. I mean, you know, the game where the public was really, really nailed was Atlanta.
Yep.
We took a lot of money on the Falcons against the Redskins, and it was a good bet. I mean, the Falcons manhandled the Redskins. The Redskins are very, very banged up, especially on the offensive line. The Redskins are down 3 offensive line starters right now. Brandon Scherff, probably the best player on the team, he's out for the year with a torn pectoral muscle. And the public really nailed us on that Falcons game. They were absolutely correct about that one.
Yep. I had a good week in the Bonanza. I'm not going to lie. I finally, all the cherries showed up on the slot machine.
Falcons was a good one, and the Vikings, too. The public was all over the Vikings, yeah, thinking that number was too cheap against the Detroit Lions in Minnesota, and they were right about that one as well. So we really needed, at 10 a.m., we really needed either the Browns, the Vikings, the Browns, the Lions, or the Redskins, and we couldn't get any of the three. So we were very far behind after the 10 a.m. games, but we rallied a little bit in the afternoon. The Saints was a good result for us. The game going over was a big loser, of course, but the Saints was better for us than the Rams.
Really? Okay. That's surprising.
The Charger game, yeah, there was a lot of money on the Rams in that game. That was good for us. The Charger game staying under was good, and the Sunday night game, we did quite well in the Sunday night game.
That was a square dog. I didn't get that alert. I didn't get that bat signal.
It wasn't that. It was the game going under.
Okay.
The game going under, and then just the secondary markets that I mentioned. Some of those prop bets, team total bets.
Right.
There was quite a bit of money on the Patriots. Believe me, but there's just so many markets to consider in a primetime game, and we did well in a lot of the other ones. But the main thing was the first half went under, and the game went under.
You mentioned that Kansas City-Cleveland game. What was the ticket count we were looking at there? The like 90% almost?
Yeah, it was insane. It really was the most one-sided game that I've seen this year in the NFL. Everybody was on Kansas City, and you could tell pretty early on that Kansas City was going to cover, simply because Cleveland could not stop them. The Chiefs' offense could basically score at will in that game. You can't say enough good things about Patrick Mahomes and all the weapons that the Chiefs have on offense. And Andy Reid's just doing a great job this season. And Kansas City looks like the best team in the AFC.
Well, and it doesn't help when the Chiefs get 7 points when they score touchdowns and the Browns only get 6.
Yeah, true. That's true. the Browns love to go for 2, don't they?
They were chasing that all game.
Yeah, I'm a fan of going for 2, but I know what you mean. Chasing the missed two-point conversion doesn't make sense, but in general, I like the move to go for 2. Mike Tomlin really was the guy that started that.
Yeah, to open the game and things like that.
Yeah.
So Chiefs started 7-0 against the point spread this year, lost 1, and then bounced back. So they're 8-1. By the way, 9-0 to start an NFL season is the record in our database, according to my memory. But Moneyline Marv had another question for us. What a name.
Good. The guy's good, Moneyline Marv.
He goes, the fact that Kansas City's 8-1 against the spread, what effect does that have on their lines? I think what he means, like power rating / lines,
yeah,
odds.
You know, it's not so much that they're covering the spread. It's just that they're so high scoring. And these teams that are really high powered offensively always have a very high power rating because they're the teams we know the public is going to bet on every week. We know the public loves these really high scoring offenses. And they definitely love the fact that the Chiefs cover every week, but I think it's more because they just score so many points. And that's why you see that line this week against the Cardinals. It went up even higher than what we had it on the look-ahead line. We made the look-ahead line 14.5. Now we opened at 17. Now we're down to 16.5. And it's just because they score so many points that we know the public is going to be on them every week.
And it's sort of like the 8-1 doesn't affect things from the odds-making standpoint as much as it does from the bettors' standpoint, right? You're going to see higher ticket counts, which may ultimately move the line. And the reason you're seeing the high ticket count is because bettors continue to be rewarded.
Oh, for sure. And the bettors, absolutely, like you just said, the bettors continue to be rewarded going in on these guys. And I can see why they keep coming back for more. And I know that we had a guy laid the look-ahead line. He bought the hook. He bought -14, -120 for $20,000 on that line. And I know we're going to take a ton of money on the Chiefs this week, although not as much as we did in the Browns game. The public would rather lay 8, 8.5 on the road than lay, you know, well into double digits at home. Usually the really high point spreads like this will keep some people off. But I don't think there's going to be much support for the Cardinals from the general public.
So you had a gentleman come in last week and bet the advanced line for Arizona this coming weekend, because you do advanced lines a week in advance as well as the upcoming weekend, and he bought a hook. You allow that as well?
Yeah, we let him do that. We let him go -14, -20 for 20K. I don't know how much that hook is worth at the 14. Not sure if that's worth 10 cents. But, look, we wouldn't give that bet to anybody. That guy's in a special category as a bettor, but And then he did have a rough weekend last weekend. He was one of the reasons why last weekend wasn't too terrible for us.
Interesting. Well, I would say that it's not worth 10 cents in my humble opinion, but that's just me.
Okay. I mean, we've talked about this many times. We have certain customers that are in special categories that we give them a little bit more leeway than we do others.
As you look at, and we'll look ahead to the lines this coming weekend momentarily, but who's sort of turning the corner? Is it the Falcons that are getting healthier? And we know about their upside, and they have such a tough schedule, but they're also in this ridiculously tough division.
I need to see a little bit more from the Falcons because I do think they just – that was the perfect storm last Sunday. The Redskins were very banged up. The Falcons were coming off of their bye week. I know that Atlanta has a lot of talent, but they're still a notch below New Orleans and Carolina in that division. I'm not sure if they're turning
that's a good point.
Yet. I think a team that may be turning the corner is the Colts. The Colts, I like Frank Reich a lot. He's done a great job with Andrew Luck. They're getting a little bit healthier. I don't know that they can catch Houston, especially because Houston seems to get lucky every week. So I don't know that they can get back into that division. But
six straight wins.
They're a team that's playing better, I would say, is the Colts.
How are the Las Vegas Raiders faring in the power ratings? So the lowest power rated team is the Bills, right?
Yeah, it's probably the Bills still, and the Raiders are right there, and the Cardinals are right there. But the Raiders are—they've clearly given up on this season. I mean, we had a lot of money on the Raiders in that Thursday night game. We had guys that got good numbers on the Raiders too. We had a guy that had +4 for like $30,000 on the Raiders. So, you know, certainly that's a tough loss for that guy when you talk about a team that went off. I think they went off as a 1.5-point favorite in that game. So certainly, you know, getting in at +4 for a big bet is a good position to be in. But the Raiders made Nick Mullins look like Aaron Rodgers on Thursday night.
So when you have that much liability at +4 and the market's moving and it's under a field goal and all that, like there's nothing you can do, right?
There's nothing you can do. You don't want to try to write money on the Niners or you're going to end up middling yourself. You just have to hope that the guy loses at that point. I mean, he bet it right when the number came out on Sunday night. Obviously, at that time, we didn't know C.J. Beathard was not going to play. And he got a very good number, and we just needed to hope that he lost, and he did.
And I guess only one way of doing it is you would just move all the juice. You would just keep it at four and make it like -200 and give away the Raiders minus.
But we would never do that here.
Right, okay.
I mean, we don't want to – we would never book an NFL game like – we would never book anything like that, but certainly not an NFL game.
You just roll the dice on getting middled, and if you do, you do.
You know, sometimes as a book, you just need decisions to go your way, is the simplest way to put it. You need to win some of these games. You need to win a game like the Browns on Sunday morning. You know, we didn't win that one, but we win enough of them over the course of the year that we're okay.
Are the Steelers the best team in that division?
Yeah, you know, I think the Steelers have moved up to probably being the fifth highest power-rated team in the league. You've got that big four of the Rams, Saints, Chiefs, and Patriots in some order. And I think right now Pittsburgh has probably moved itself up to number five. I put them slightly ahead of Minnesota and Carolina and the Chargers.
It's amazing, like clockwork, right? Like, here we are ready to write them off, no Le'Veon Bell. Patriots struggle out of the gates, 0-2 on the road to start as well. Bengals 4-1 atop the division. Dolphins making some noise. Not that everyone was completely buying the Dolphins, but they were 3-0. And sure enough, here you look up early to mid-November, Patriots 7-2 in first place, Steelers 5-2-1 in first place.
Yeah, and the Steelers' critical wins in Cincinnati and then last Sunday in Baltimore. Those two wins really put them in a position to win the division yet again. When you beat your two main division rivals both in their home stadium, You're certainly in pole position to win the division. And the Steelers, like, they asked me this week, what do I think Le'Veon Bell is worth to the point spread? I'd say nothing right now. What's the difference?
Interesting. So if he came back,
I think the market would move because there's a perception that, you know, Le'Veon Bell's back. So, yes, I do think the market would move. But do you really think he's worth anything right now? I mean, he hasn't played all year. I mean, I think that there's some element of he's going to be fresh down the stretch, which could work in the Steelers' favor in some ways, but I don't think they've really lost anything with James Conner in there.
Yeah, I mean, when the news hit, we talked about it from an odds perspective. and running backs are replaceable. I've said some things like about Leonard Fournette that got people all bent out of shape, and I understand.
Well, God forbid you tell the truth, man.
Well, I mean, it was a little bit of both. I was saying that he wasn't, you know, the greatest running back of all time, but also that, you know, that these other running backs are, I mean, there's depth at the position across the league much more than we have at, like, say, quarterback.
Absolutely. That's totally true. And you see that every year in the NFL. You can't replace a top quarterback. You just can't. Because nobody has enough money to have two elite quarterbacks on their roster. The salary cap doesn't allow it. But you can definitely replace a running back that goes out with an injury. And we see it all the time.
So of all the division leaders, the Bears look like probably the biggest surprise right now. And
yeah, the Bears have played a very easy schedule. I think that we need to keep that in mind. But absolutely, I agree with you.
And they're the Packers, 3-4-1 with 40-1 odds to win it all.
I just don't see how Green Bay could. I mean, they would need to win the division for that to be a value bet, and then get one playoff game in Lambeau, and then probably have a combination of the Saints and the Rams both on the road, and then New England or Kansas City in the Super Bowl, let's just say. I don't think you're getting away with anything at 40-1.
Yeah, there's a lot of combined probability you have to factor in when you look at these futures. I mean, I'm sitting with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at 50-1, and I'm not sure there's value there when you figure out,
you know,
what kind of odds they're going to have.
I made one Super Bowl future bet this season, which I haven't done in a few years, but I bet the Chargers over the summer at, I think, 24-1, I want to say, and it seems like it should be a good bet because they're 6-2, but really, if they don't win the division, it's not a good bet. Because if they don't win the division, then they've got to win 3 road games and the Super Bowl. And I won't be getting away with anything at 24-1.
And you didn't think the Chiefs would have one of the most prolific offenses in NFL history to compete with in the division?
No, I did not. I mean, I liked Mahomes coming out of college. I thought he was going to be an interesting project. But no, I certainly didn't see this coming at all.
All right, good stuff. Recapping, let's get to the line straight ahead. Back here on the Behind the Bets podcast, Doug Kazarian and John Murray. By the way, Murray, during this taping, we got a little shout-out from our friends at Bet the Process.
Yeah.
And Jeff Ma and Rufus Peabody giving us a little shout-out. They were listening, loyal listeners, and talked about it, about the handle on the college football potential national championship game between Clemson and Alabama, the 8.5 you guys have, and the limits you have of $5,000.
Those guys are really sharp guys. I listen to their podcasts all the time. Yeah, and I hope that they said that the $5,000 was a respectable limit on something like that.
They did. They did, and they brought up the incentive that the House has on holding that kind of money between now and then, especially on a hypothetical game. But that's inherent. It's you absorb the risk of being off, you know, having a bad line.
Yeah, that's all very true. And $5,000 won't be a big bet on that game at the end of the day, at the time of kickoff. But if you're talking about a look-ahead number like that, it's a pretty respectable limit. It's hard to imagine that the number would be something drastically different than 8.5 unless there was a quarterback injury to one of those two teams. That's the only thing that I think would really drastically move the number. Like, let's say Tua gets hurt in the SEC championship game. Then Alabama might only be maybe a 3-point favorite against Clemson.
Right, and that's the key between this and like a look-ahead line all season for a game that you know is being played. Because if Tua got hurt in the next game, there's a chance they don't get to the playoff, right? So the quarterback injury not only would have to occur, it would have to occur really close to that game because the teams would then domino effect not play in that game if the key player got hurt. Whereas in September, you can bet the Iron Bowl, and you know that game's being played, and obviously there's more volatility in the potential spread of that one.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's all true. And yeah, I think it's fun that we do these things, and it is true that we do a lot of it for publicity, but this is one thing where we are taking pretty serious bets on the game and, of course, trying to generate some publicity.
Little known fact, Jeff Ma, I've known him for about 2 decades. He coached MIT water polo when I was playing at Brown.
I did not know that. That is a little known fact.
Yeah, and he, you know, water polo, I always say it's like lacrosse, very regional, very kind of clicky. So we'd play MIT like 2-3 times a year. And so, and then four years, that's a lot of it. So you kind of know the guys, you know the players, and I think he was doing his blackjack stuff at the time as well, or maybe he had just stopped it, or who knows with the timeline. Of course, I didn't know it at the time. Talking to some teammates of mine in the early to mid-2000s when stuff comes out, the movie comes out, things like that, they mentioned Jeff Ma, and then I run into Jeff at Vegas, introduce myself. He's like, oh, yeah, number seven, right? I'm like, yeah.
Wow. That's pretty good memory. No wonder he was so good at blackjack.
Well, that's true. That's true. But maybe I was just that memorable as a player, Murray.
I should have thought of that first. You're absolutely right.
So obviously become friends. He's done some work for us at ESPN. And he played at Phillips Exeter, and I did two different years, but we have a lot of connection there. So Jeff and I have talked about the glory.
Rufus and I are from the same area, too.
Oh, that's right.
I'm from McLean, Virginia. I'm pretty sure he's from Alexandria, Virginia. I wouldn't completely guarantee that, but I know we've spoke about it before, and I'm pretty sure he's from, I know he's from the D.C. area. I know he's a Redskins fan, yep, like I am, unfortunately. But we're from a very similar part of the country for sure.
Good stuff. All right, man. So thanks to those guys for listening, and appreciate the shout out, and we're trying to return one your way as well. As for the NFL card this coming weekend, what games do you anticipate having huge decisions for the house?
Do you want to start with the Browns game? That's always a good place to start. No, certainly the Falcons will be a very popular play.
It's an inflated line.
It's ridiculously inflated. Like right now, I just pulled it up because we're talking about it. The ticket count on this game, I'm just going to give you the exact numbers. It's still pretty early in the week. We have 113 bets on the Falcons. We have 7 bets on the Browns. So that's the ticket count as of Thursday morning. We just see this almost every week with the Browns, especially when they're a home dog, excuse me. People love to play those road favorites in Cleveland, DK, and they've been rewarded many times doing that, so I can see why.
But this year's different. Cleveland's 5-4 overall against the number, if my memory serves me correctly. But this line's getting out of hand. It's 5.5. Where do you think it closes?
I want to say it can't go any higher than this. I want to say there's going to be some resistance from the sharper players taking the Browns, plus 5.5. I'll say it closes at 4.5. I can't believe that it would go to 6. I just can't believe that. Atlanta's coming off of a big win, and Cleveland's coming off of a bad loss, so the number's inherently inflated just because of that. I mean, I can tell you guys that when we did the 12-day number on this game last week, we had a sharper guy that I really respect, took Cleveland plus 1.5 on the look-ahead line, and now it's 5.5. I mean, I have to think there's some value on the Browns here, but I feel like I've said that every week for the last 3 years. It's like a...
How much?
Getting tired of saying.
When you're taking these bets, how much are we talking here?
These bets that we've taken on Atlanta so far, mostly smaller bets.
Or the look ahead.
The look ahead line. We'll take 2 dimes on the look ahead line. Now we call that the 12-day number. We put it out every Tuesday for the following week, and we take 2,000 on that, which I think is a pretty respectable limit. That's another thing too, where it's just four of us putting our heads together, making the lines, and there's no market for it at all. And we just put them up there. We take 2,000 on those.
So this goes back to what I talked about during the Bonanza a week ago, with the Browns being the lowest scoring team in the NFL in the first quarter and the live wagering variable.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying there. I think the one area where I'll disagree with you a little bit is not everybody has access to live wagering on every 10 a.m. game. Like, pretty much every book you're going to bet at is going to have live wagering on Thursday Night Football, Monday Night Football, but not every single 10 a.m. game is going to be available for live betting.
Yeah, I was in that predicament. I was texting you. I was like, what do I do here? Yeah. I think it was the Bears game you did not have, so I had to use a William Hill line.
The Bears-Bills game didn't quite make the cut here at the Superbook. No, I mean, we do a few games in the morning and a few games in the afternoon, and we do all the primetime games, but not every customer is going to have access, not every better, I should say, is going to have access to live wagering on every NFL game every Sunday.
Fair point. All right, so that's going to be a big game. I didn't think it'd be that big. I mean, nothing like Kansas City at Cleveland. But you're telling me...
No, it won't be that big. Kansas City at Cleveland, that was our biggest 10 a.m. decision of the year.
But I mean, what did that line close? 8?
I think it was 8 or 8.5. It got as low as 7.5, and then there was some buyback from the public. They laid 8, they laid 8.5. didn't matter so in the end. I mean, right now, our biggest decision right now, I can give you that one.
Hold on. I'm trying to make a point. So Atlanta's 5.5. So you're telling me Kansas City is only 3 points better on a neutral than the Falcons? Or
last week was clearly the bad number. I think this is an inflated number, is what I think. I think there's a lot of value on Cleveland plus 5.5. But do we really want to go down that road again?
Taxed income on Cleveland. Do we want to do that?
Do we really want to go? So, I mean, aren't there – you're in this part of the calendar now. We're recording this on November 8th. You've got hockey, NBA, college basketball, college football, all kinds of soccer and fighting to choose from. Do you really want to bet on the Cleveland Browns, Doug?
No. No, you do not. So I interrupted. You were saying that there is – what is your most liability?
Right now it's Jacksonville. We had a guy bet Jacksonville plus 3.5 for to win $60,000.
Oh my God.
And that's our biggest liability. We've taken a lot of money on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, too.
Yep.
Tampa Bay, a 3-point favorite right now at the Superbook over the banged up Washington Redskins. There's going to be a lot of money on the Bucs in that game. Redskins looked so bad last week. And then certainly you're going to have the usual suspects. We're going to have a lot of liability on New England. They're a 6.5-point favorite on the road. And we're going to have a ton of liability on the Packers. They're a 9.5-point favorite at home against Miami. That game is in the afternoon. Probably be the most heavily bet game in that afternoon session, I would think. Bit of a quarterback mismatch, Brock Osweiler and Aaron Rodgers. So somewhat of an M&M-er there between those two guys.
bit of one.
Just a little bit.
That line, that's an interesting line. It's 9.5 for the home team.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of points, but
yeah,
I feel like I'll take it, and then I'll see Brock Osweiler and go, oh, God, what was I thinking?
Yeah, that could be a get-right game for the Packers.
Huh. Packers have had a very tough schedule. I know we've talked about it a few times, but they've really, the last 2 weeks especially, we're talking about going to L.A. and then going across the country at New England on Sunday Night Football. It's brutal. Brutal two-week stretch.
It's interesting you took that big bet on Jacksonville. Mike Clay is coming up later on the podcast. He does projections for everything, like matchups, obviously the props that we talk about. But also he thinks the Colts should be favored by like a touchdown in that game, at least his projections. Whether that should be the case by the house, that's a whole different story. But a lot of disparity
there. I like
there.
The Colts in that game myself. Yeah. I feel like the Colts are a team that's getting it together. I really like Frank Reich. I think he was a really good hire by Indianapolis. And as they get healthier, I think that they can potentially get back into the AFC South race. But like I said earlier, they need the Texans to lose some of these coin flip games. How many 50-50 games can the Texans win in a row?
Yeah. No, I well, look.
They've been very fortunate.
The other way to look at it would be they're making them coin flip games where they really should be winning, right?
Oh, certainly.
They have Deshaun Watson. They have Hopkins. Yeah, I mean, what are they doing in these nail biters in some of these games?
Well, I'm going to pin that on Bill O'Brien. Okay. I think Bill O'Brien is
careful.
I don't think
careful.
Much of Bill O'Brien.
He's a Brown alum. Careful.
All right. I mean, we can skip. We'll skip right over that. But no, I think Bill O'Brien is fortunate to be 6-3. How about that?
How about this quarterback matchup? What happens to the point spread with Sam Darnold out?
Yeah, it went from 7, Jets 7 to Jets 6.5. I could make a case that Josh McCown is better than Sam Darnold.
That'd be an easy case to make, I think.
Sam Darnold's been a turnover machine. Now, there have been some reports that Josh Allen is questionable to play on Sunday. I definitely think Josh Allen, despite his struggles, is a huge upgrade from Nathan Peterman.
Yeah, I like the Bills in this game. I think it's too many points. Yeah. The problem is the Jets are competent. I wish it was Buffalo getting more points at a better team, like maybe Cincinnati or something.
That's an ugly game. I mean, I don't know that I don't have a whole lot to say about that game. I feel like there's other stuff to talk about. That would have been a hell of a quarterback matchup if it was Peterman and Darnold. I would have liked that over 36.5 turnovers leading to some short fields between those two gentlemen.
Oh, I thought you meant over 36.5 turnovers in that game.
I said last week I liked the over in the Bears Bills game.
Yeah.
I didn't have the wherewithal to play it, of course, but I said I liked it because there'd be turnovers, and sure enough, pick six from our boy Jay Peterman to Leonard Floyd, the linebacker.
He did go over the 1.5 picks. We were a little sure of this. By the way, Odd Shark also tweeting this out. Do you know the Kansas City Chiefs are 9-0 in the coin flip this year?
Really? No, I did not.
9-0. So do you adjust the odds on winning the coin flip? That's the question. On a 50-50 outcome.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. No, I didn't know that.
What's one over two to the ninth tower, right?
I consider NFL betting to be a coin flip, but 9 in a row, that's impressive.
What do you make of this Kansas City line, 16.5 with Arizona? I joked about it on SportsCenter. The point spread is a great equalizer. As we know, like, for example, I could play golf against Tiger Woods for money, right? I would just get like 40 strokes or whatever. I'm Arizona. He's Kansas City in this matchup.
Really? Okay, I wasn't sure. Yeah, I'm going golfing with a buddy of mine who's a scratch golfer on Monday, and yesterday we had a hard negotiation about what the line would be, how many holes he'd have to give me. That's the great thing about the point spread, man, is it's the great equalizer. You can take any two people or any two teams and find a way to make it essentially, in theory at least, a 50-50 proposition. I think this number's about right. I mean, it might be a little high. It might be a little inflated off of Kansas City's win. I think Arizona's got some solid veteran players that play with pride. But I don't want to get away in the way of this Patrick Mahomes train. I did that last week. I'm not going down that road again.
I will say this about the golf handicap. It is computed on stroke play and applied on match play. So there's inefficiency. So someone like myself who has about a 14 handicap, but I am capable of birdies and pars, but I'm capable of blowups. I am like, I optimize that handicap because if I play a scratch golf or stroke play, he'll probably beat me with the handicap. But if I play a match play, like, I'll win.
No, I understand, because that way one disastrous hole is only one loss of a hole. I get it. I mean, I got an even better strategy, though. I'm just going to pump this guy a few beers into this kid before we negotiate
line.
And then it'll be very fair.
But that thought process is what I used to do with game sevens in the NBA playoffs. I would always bet the first quarter under. And then if I lost, press for the second and then do the same. All four quarters don't go over in game sevens. They just don't. Because teams lock down on defense, so you might have high variance. Or like a high quarter, like a 58-point quarter when the total is like 49.5. But the second quarter's not going to go. You know what I'm saying? Like the game might go over, but all four quarters are not going to go over.
Oh, I understand. No, and I'm actually the same way on the golf course. I'll hit some good shots. I'll put some pars on the board, but then I'll have like a 10 on one hole.
X.
So
pocket,
you know, and just
pocket.
Right. It happens, man. It happens. Especially on that back nine. You've had a few beers in the Las Vegas sun. These things happen, man.
Unless you're playing in Death Valley with humans, it's 117's is minimum temperature that he likes to play.
Yeah, I've heard that about Matt. That's very he's an interesting guy.
Yeah, that's strange. Strange approach to golf. It has to be triple digits, but nothing below 107, I think, is his cutoff.
Oh, okay. Well, it's only 99 degrees, guys. I can't play today.
Yeah, no, he doesn't like it as much. All right, so I wonder about this Chiefs game. I mean, that's a weather game. If it's cold, then you kind of unload on Kansas City. But what do we make of the Raiders against the Chargers here? I mean, do they rally the troops a little bit after such an embarrassing performance on primetime?
Well, the Raiders don't want to win. We know that. I think they've made that clear. As far as covering the spread, I don't know if I can run out and lay 9.5 points on the road with Anthony Lynn and Phillip Rivers, to be honest with you. I think that's a tough game to pick, really. Mm-hmm. But Oakland has clearly shown the world that they don't want to win. That's obvious. Really, they showed the world that when they traded Khalil Mack.
Right. Right, you could argue.
And if I could go back in time, Kai, I would have just bet my entire bankroll on the Raiders under 8 wins. I did at least have the sense to bet it here in lovely Las Vegas for myself. But that was the bet of the year. The Raiders were never going to win 8 or 9 games. They don't want to win.
Kai?
Hindsight is 20/20, yeah. My friend.
No, you're right. I should have. I know we talked about it before week one, that I really liked Raiders under 8.
Yeah.
Should have just done that, but didn't do it because I'm a fool.
What lines do you think going to move the most between now and kickoff?
I can't I don't really see any of these afternoon favorites going higher than 9.5. All three of the afternoon games are 9.5-point favorites, which is kind of a weird coincidence. I could see maybe the Saints line going up. Right now we got the Saints minus 5.5. The Bengals are going to be without A.J. Green, probably their best player. And you know the public is going to be all over the Saints in this game.
Yeah.
For sure. The Patriots, you'll probably end up seeing some sevens on that game. The public will be all over New England. And, you know, these are exactly the kind of games the public has been winning this year. They've been winning bets like Patriots minus 6.5, Saints minus 5.5. So you'll probably see some books panicking, raising the numbers. The Bears, we got the Bears right now minus 6.5, minus 120. You're definitely going to see some sevens on that game this week. And it's just those are the kind of bets the public's been winning on, and that's why we've lost in the NFL three weekends in a row, because bets like that have been cashing.
We'll get to the bonanza momentarily, but thoughts on tonight's game? High profile, obviously two playoff teams, or two first-place teams at least, and with the Steelers, such a popular national fan base, what do you make of tonight's line?
You know, it's been interesting the way this game has been bet, and the money has really come in on Carolina. I mean, we had this game as high as 6.5 earlier in the week. We're all the way down to Carolina plus 3.5, and that's minus 120 on Carolina.
Wow.
So just sharp money coming in? A lot of sharp money coming in on Carolina. Actually, the public is on Carolina, too. We've got about a little over 2-1 ticket count on the Panthers right now here at the Superbook. So it's been kind of interesting just because Pittsburgh is coming off of such an impressive victory over Baltimore on Sunday. I've definitely been surprised by how much support there's been for Carolina in this game. Definitely the best Thursday night game we've had in about a month. It's going to be a real treat after the last few Thursday night games we had to endure.
I was about to say, you sure about last week's game? That wasn't thriller?
No. Well, what about Denver, Arizona? That was the true standout, I think, for the Thursday card. No, this would be a good game. Both of these teams have aspirations of deep playoff runs, and I think they're both capable of it. So definitely going to be a good one here.
Mike Clay expecting a high-scoring game in that one. We'll get to mad props in a little bit, but first, you know what time it is.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Murray, at about 2 a.m. last night, I had to go back through old podcasts and get our tallies because I was not a good bookkeeper for some of these. And it was painful to listen to both of us, to be honest.
Man.
Talk about some bets. Not that we loved any. Not that we were like, this is a winner. Absolutely free. But it was painful. Been like, I'm going to take this. I'm like, don't do it.
My buddy was having a rough day on Saturday. College football, and he sent me this great meme of Matthew McConaughey in Two for the Money, just all disheveled and sweaty after a losing week, asking, what did I go? And that's pretty much how I feel about the NFL. What did I go last week? Oh, my God.
It's brutal, man. You've mentioned Two for the Money a few times on the pod, and obviously we have a lot of drops courtesy of Bob Lee on there. I got to tell this story. So when I lived in Vegas, I would go home to L.A. and see my mom a lot, you know, just quick flight or quick drive. And, you know, you want to spend time with the mom, and there's only so much, you know. So we decided to watch a movie. And I was like, oh, this is a gambling movie I haven't seen that I want to. And it was on – we did not go to it. It was already out on demand and stuff. So we watched it. And, you know, my mom – I'm one of five brothers, so my mom is not exactly foreign to the concept of a point spread. So I was like, oh, this will be a good watch. It's Matthew McConaughey. And I guess the on-demand version had like a uncensored – version of the movie, which, again,
really?
One of five brothers, a few F-bombs here and there, nothing my mom hasn't heard, and I'm thinking nothing of it, but there's that scene where Pacino gets him a hooker.
Yes.
And then that scene is very uncomfortable, so I actually grabbed the remote and fast-forwarded it. I didn't think I would have to, but it got to a point where it was not healthy to watch that with your mother in the room.
I'm uncomfortable just hearing the story.
Yes.
Honestly, this is uncomfortable.
So it was a good chuckle, but I couldn't find the remote fast enough. Let's put it that way.
that came out while I was a student at West Virginia University. Changed my life. What a great film.
I can just see Doug scrambling for the remote right now.
Jeremy Piven has a great turn as a tout service in that movie.
Yes, he was excellent.
Yeah, Jerry the Source Sykes, I believe, was his name. And That movie is so good. But it's always good when we're having a losing weekend. We'll send each other back and forth some two-for-the-money memes of McConaughey's meltdown when he goes on that big losing streak.
On your mother's house or not, with my mother in it.
I don't bet on the NFL, Walter.
So that, because you think a lot of these in these movies that are somewhat mainstream, you think that the like the scene will start and then it'll be like the next morning, right?
Right.
But that scene went the entire way. Like it was really uncomfortable. So
I can see that.
Speaking of uncomfortable, our tally. So I crunched the numbers.
Oh boy, this is ugly.
You're at minus 7,100.
Oh, 7,100.
You pressed hard.
I barely got any money left to play with. You know what? I got to talk to Kai.
We have rebuys. We have rebuys.
I'm just going to say, I'm going to mail Kai a blank check. Kai, I don't want to know what you write on it, but just write something on it and go cash it and let me out of this whole thing.
Or you can just play defense. You can just like start punting on third down and let me blow it all.
You know, one of my buddies, a very loyal listener of the show, he gave me a play last week on Mariota under yards, and that number went down like 20 yards. He gave it to me under 228.5. It closed like 208.5. So I got to give him props. He apologized to me when it lost, and I was like, hey, dude, that number moved by 20 yards. I'll take that bet anytime.
But, yeah, and Mike Clay was on it as well. All signs point to it, and you really should have if the – oh, gosh, that game got away. But Mariota made some nice throws, especially third and long, the big one.
He did.
At the end of the first half, that was a huge throw and probably cost you the prop.
He played well and against a good Dallas defense, too. The Cowboys' defense is actually pretty good this year. Their offense with Jason Garrett at the helm is another story. But, no, I'm not going to complain if some guy gives me a pick and the market moves by 20 yards on a low number. That's a low passing yards number.
Right.
So certainly I would take that again. And he gave me another play for tonight's game that we can get into.
So just to recap, I had those two initial positions for the Chiefs. I believe I took plus 12.5 and 13.5 on the buyback on the Browns. And then the Bears game, I should have just sat on it. It was my favorite play. I loved it all week. I did buy all of it back. So ate the juice on those. Did hit my other picks, though. I hit the over. Hit the side. I hit a teaser. I was feeling it last week. So I'm at plus 5480. I'm at plus 5480.
Wow, this is gonna be tough for me to make up. You know, I gave Brent the Ravens, Brent Musburger, the Ravens
Mr.
for the
Director.
Super contest.
Mr. Director,
I saw him on Tuesday, and I said to him, I did the show Tuesday at the South Point, and I said to him, you know, Brent, if I'd known that Ronnie Stanley was going to get ruled out on Friday, I would have never given you the Ravens on Wednesday, but if I had known that, if I'd had all the information in front of me, I would have given you the Broncos, and they lost anyway. So I thought it was going to be a teaching moment to prove to him why you shouldn't put your Super Contest picks on Wednesday, and I don't think you should do that, by the way. But it didn't matter anyway because my backup play was Denver. I really like Denver minus -1 against Houston on Sunday. What a pushed.
Yeah, well, you talked about that earlier. You should have pushed.
Made that field goal. Should have pushed that one, but it's okay. The NFL. The NFL is very cruel.
No doubt. All right. So I don't have any middling potential opportunities. I'm going one big play.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about even going bigger to create some, let you back in this game. But we'll go three dimes on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers minus -3 even money against your Washington Redskins.
Against my Washington Redskins, I got to root against you on that one. We've already taken quite a bit of money on the Buccaneers in this game. We actually had a guy get in at minus -1.5 for $30,000 on Tampa Bay. And right now we're at minus -3 even, like you just mentioned. The Redskins are going to be without pretty much every key guy they have on the offensive line. So it's going to be a lot to ask of Alex Smith and Adrian Peterson without their top offensive linemen this Sunday.
Yeah, I just think Tampa's they're going to get right in this game at home. Washington banged up, like you mentioned, limited offense, although they did get some offensive scoring in the second half last week, which was a rarity. But I just think the Bucs get right in this game.
Fair enough. I got to root against you, but it's okay.
I understand.
No hard feelings. Well, I'll give you – I only have two plays this week. One of them is my own, and one of them is my buddy's, and they're both in the Thursday night game.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll be doing nothing on Sunday. I'm going with the over tonight, over 51. We had a guy that I really respect went over 50 in this game. It's up to 51, but I still like it. I'll go over 51 here for 1,100 to win 1,000.
Okay, a dime. When are we going to do parlays? When are you going to do like three-team parlays to try to get it?
Three-team parlay? I don't know that it'll ever get. I don't know if it'll ever get that desperate. It makes me cringe when I see these like people post on Twitter. They hit like a 14-team parlay in the NFL. I'm like, I can't even pick one NFL winner. How could you possibly do that?
Why not?
I give them credit. You know, the Super Contest leader is like 36-9. I mean, I know that's against a static number, but still, that's mighty insane. Impressive, man.
Well, but again, it's sort of a lottery. When you have that many people, it's kind of, I mean, sure. It's like the sure. World Series of Poker. The main event winner's not necessarily the best player.
Still impressive. You know, when the Super Contest consensus does well, the book does not do well. And I think the consensus plays went 4-1 last week and 5-0 the week before. And it's showing up in our bottom line.
So I could be done here. I think I was looking at the Bills and I was looking at the Niners on Monday night, but there's nothing that excites me there. And then the teasers don't really excite me. I'm just going to do that one solid play there. That's it. 3K.
Okay.
I'm just going to Tampa Bay.
I'll give you my buddy's prop play. This price has actually bounced around a lot, but he wanted to go under 4.5 sacks in the game tonight. Right now it's -135. It's bounced around a little bit. It got as high as -150. It's come back to earth a little. It was -120 this morning, but it's currently -135. I'm a man of integrity, so I'll do it for 675 to win 500.
Okay. I like it.
And that's it. That's going to be it for me. Just two this week.
All right, bud. Well, that's good stuff. We'll get back on track for you, hopefully. Or you have to buy back.
Hopefully.
That's part of the rules.
Hopefully. Yeah, I know what Kai's rooting for. I mean, he's all friendly when I call in, but I know he's rooting against me. God, it hurts me, too.
You know, respectfully, though, of course.
No, it's fine. It's fine. NFL is so hard, man. It's tough. It really is. But the public seems to do very well at it. There was a lot of cheering in the book on Sunday. You know, I'd love to play Cleveland +5.5, Doug, but I just
you can't.
I've seen that game so many times. That I just can't go through with it. Although that was the play we gave Brent for the Super Contest. We gave him Cleveland.
I was just about to ask, what did you give him? Yeah.
Gave him Cleveland. And you know what? He actually, I talked to him yesterday, and he liked the play. So he was on board with it. Hopefully, I'd love to give Brent another winner. I'm 5-4 on the Brent plays.
Come on, lad. You don't need 500.
I know. You know, he's doing well. He's doing well. He's in like the top 200,
awesome.
Which is, you know, there's like 3,500 people in the thing, so that's pretty good.
Good deal. All right, man. Well, good stuff. Best of luck to all of us and all of our listeners, and let's get together. Or let's get it going,
yeah,
I should
man.
Say.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right, bud.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Thanks to John Murray. Hopefully we hit our Bonanza bets and really make a push as we approach the second half of the season. Mike Clay is going to join us momentarily for some mad props, but first a word from one of our sponsors. Hey, gents, every man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. We make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BEHINDTHEBETS for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater. And they'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at an introductory price of $79.
Talk nerdy to me.
That time of the podcast, Mike Clay, Fantasy Insider, joins us here. Mike, 500 record last week, but always good to have a little side action with the game within the game with the prop bets.
Yeah. I think we're a little over 500 for the season, but we've been kind of floating over 500 the past couple of weeks. The props have been a little disappointing. I'm not seeing many massive gaps with my projections, which is disappointing. But we have a few every week, so we'll keep chipping away.
I like where you're headed here for this Thursday night game, because I'm expecting a lot of points. And it sounds like you are, too.
Yeah, I'm liking this one for sure. I'm liking actually the over on for both teams. I have this one at 29-26 in favor of the Steelers. The lines here for Pittsburgh, it's 27.5 at -120, and Carolina's over the line's 24 at -110. So I'm a few points over on both. And you know, you look into these teams, Doug, and you see a lot of offense, both scored and allowed. And in fact, I don't think people realize this: the Steelers averaging 3.4 offensive touchdowns per game this season. That's fifth in the league. That is highest during the Big Ben era. I mean, by far highest. So, you know, they're breaking some team records here along the way. Most likely they'll end up there by the end of the season. And as for the Panthers, they're at 3.3 touchdowns per game offensively, right behind Pittsburgh. That's eighth. And that matches the 2015 season, which was the year Cam was, you know, right up there in the MVP race, and that offense couldn't be stopped. So both of these teams have been fantastic. And, you know, if you look at the defensive side of the ball, they're actually tied. They're ranked 10th, allowing 2.8 touchdowns per game. So they've struggled on that side of the ball, allowing points. And even if you go more specific with the Panthers here, their defense has allowed two or more touchdowns in seven straight games, including three-plus during five of those seven games. So, again, I'm with you. I think this could be a very high-scoring game.
I love that you talked about all that, even mentioned MVP for Cam Newton, because if it weren't for Jared Goff, if it weren't for Drew Brees, if it weren't for Patrick Mahomes, really, we'd be talking more about Cam Newton and the job he's doing with the Panthers. Now, they've had a more balanced attack. Obviously, you mentioned Christian McCaffrey, and they're not running away with the NFC like they did the year he did win the MVP when they went 15-1. But he has quietly led this team. They are 6-2, right behind the Saints there in the division, and he's doing a little bit of everything for that team.
Yeah, no question. And I was tweeting about this the other day related to Tom Brady. Same kind of thing, right? Like, his numbers, not quite as dominant as the past couple of years, primarily because they've run the ball a little bit more and they've been scoring a lot of rushing touchdowns. But, you know, he's playing at a high level, and New England's still scoring a ton of points. But it's not like they're worse. It's just there's so many other teams that have passed them out, right? They've just been so much better. And you know, from a fantasy perspective, that's why Tom Brady has not been a good fantasy quarterback this season. So, again, it's not really his fault. It's just so many other offenses have passed them out. And it's the same kind of thing with Carolina, with how Cam's playing. It's the same thing with Atlanta. Matt Ryan won the MVP 2 years ago, and he's playing better than he did that season this year. I mean, he's just been lights out. So, but, again, they're losing, and there's other quarterbacks, like you mentioned, Mahomes, Goff, the list goes on and on, Drew Brees, who are just blowing them out of the water.
Side note, what are your numbers, and if you don't have them in front of you, I apologize for catching you off guard, but elsewhere in the division with Ryan Fitzpatrick in there with the Bucks, how much better of a team are they with him versus Jameis Winston with your projections?
I don't think it's too much different. I mean, they're both very volatile. You know, I think Winston, since he came back from injury last season, has played better football, probably the best of his career. Now, he regressed a little bit this season, turned it over a few times, but he was, you know, in all, if you look at a larger sample, about, we'll say, the last 10, 12 games of his career, he has been improved. And, you know, if you look even closer, I mean, back in week one, two, and three, when Fitz was there, they scored 12 touchdowns. They scored four last week. But the previous 3 weeks, they scored four against Atlanta, three against Cleveland, four against Cincinnati. And obviously, Jameis was mixed in for some of that action. So I don't think I would move the needle too much for the offense, or if you're looking at target distribution or scoring. I think if Fitz was benched and Winston back in, it wouldn't be much different. It's just they have so many – the offensive line's better. They have a lot of guys to throw the football to, one of the deepest wide receiver units in the NFL, and they're throwing the ball a ton. 70% of the time they've thrown it one of the pass-heaviest teams in the NFL, also throwing, also scoring a lot of their touchdowns through the air. So, yeah, I don't think it really makes a difference. I think they're pretty much interchangeable at this point.
You mentioned how often they throw. They really do throw. I believe they've gone over in every game this year but two, if I remember correctly. Actually, just one. So only one game for the Bucs has gone under the total. So they are usually playing from behind, throwing a lot, and they've been a very fun team to watch in that regard. So let's keep it back on the props for the high-profile games in terms of the night games. We just touched on the Thursday game. But you like – oh, before we recap, you like McCaffrey to score a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm going to lean toward him just with the plus 120. You know, the nose minus 140, whether or not he'll score. But I like the offenses in this game, as I mentioned, and at plus 120, it's a bit attractive here. So, again, these ones are riskier, but the payoff is better, as listeners obviously know. But there's some reason to be optimistic here. I mean, McCaffrey, he scored four touchdowns over his past four games, and that was after a quiet start. He only had one score during his first six. And his role really hasn't changed too much, though. I mean, the only significant difference you could find, really, is that he's had double digits in back-to-back weeks for the first time in his career and in back-to-back games for only the second time. So they're really committing to him as a rusher, and his role as a pass catcher hasn't really changed too much. You look at usage near the goal line, McCaffrey actually leads the team with four carries inside the five. He's ahead of Cam Newton in that category. He has two end zone targets, which doesn't sound like much, but that's second most in the NFL among running backs to only T.J. Yeldon. Running backs just don't get targeted in the end zone very often. And, you know, again, take it one step deeper. If you look at, and I just posted this on Twitter, at Mike Lay NFL, a full chart of all 32 teams. If you look at teams' usage of players and their play calling near the goal line, you can kind of determine an expected touchdown total or at least an expected passing touchdown total for each team based on that play calling. And New England is the run heaviest near the goal line this season. Washington is second, and Carolina is third. So they love to run the ball near the goal line. That should add up to additional opportunities for McCaffrey as well. So, again, he gets his 20 touches in this game, as he probably will. He's about a 50-50 shot to find the end zone. So a plus 120, that's definitely attractive.
All right. Sorry to jump around a little bit. I started to move the sticks and forgot about that one prop bet. So I'm glad you elaborated on that. Now we go to Sunday night, where we all get a treat. We all get to watch Dak Prescott and the Cowboys in another primetime game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least you have some star power, right, with Zeke Elliott. Now you have the Amari Cooper storyline. And obviously, yeah, my Eagles, Doug, who, you know, a big Eagles fan, so I'll be more than happy to watch that one. But so I guess I'm guessing.
By the way, sorry to interrupt, your Eagles favorites to win the division right now, even though they're not in first place. They're a game back.
Uh-huh. I agree with that. Obviously, bringing in Golden Tate and looking ahead, you know, if I project out every week. It updates every single week in my system here. So I have them as the winners as well. I have them with 9 wins, Washington finishing 8-8, Dallas 7-9, and the Giants down with 3 or 4 wins. So I'm with you there. I do think they win it.
So you have the Redskins finishing 7-9. That means going 2-6 the rest of the way?
No, 8-8 for the 8-8 for the Redskins, 7-9 for Dallas.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay, we're going to get to this Sunday night. You have a prop for us, but real quickly, any division leaders you project that aren't currently in first place besides the Eagles?
I'd have to look at the I'd have to pull up the NFL standings here. Is Pittsburgh in first right now, or are they still?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
They're in first now. Okay. I have them winning. I'll just make it simple. I have the Patriots, the Steelers, Houston, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the Bears, the Saints, and the Rams. So I guess it's pretty straightforward.
Okay, so only the Eagles. But that means you have the Bears because they're tied. Well, not tied. They have the same amount of wins as the Vikings. They're ahead in win percentage because Minnesota has a tie. Why the Bears over the Vikings?
Yeah, you're right. They're both, yeah, you're right. 5-3-1 for Minnesota. It's close. I mean, they're scoring the football. I mean, and that's huge. I mean, they have a great defense. On both sides, you expect similar output from the defenses. Minnesota, maybe a slight edge, but, you know, Chicago has been terrific at forcing turnovers, so they're great on that side of the ball. And then offensively, you're getting a lot from the Bears. I mean, averaging 3 touchdowns a game. The last time they scored under 3 offensive touchdowns in a game was week 3 against Arizona. They had that slow start with the Packers, Seahawks, and Cardinals. Since then, they've just been scoring at will pretty much. Whereas Minnesota, you know, they've been a little bit more up and down. They've been solid, but they're behind. I mean, they are trailing Chicago in terms of offensive production. So I'm giving them a slight edge. And, you know, schedule is obviously factored into this. I do have Minnesota with the hardest schedule going forward, and I have Chicago mid-pack. So I guess that's probably the most important thing, the Vikings schedule being toughest in the league.
Yeah, we talked about it with John Murray, director and odds maker at the Superbook, and he mentioned that the Bears have the very easy schedule to this point, but that was nice that you pointed out the Vikings' difficulty moving forward. So the number one most difficult schedule the rest of the way is the Minnesota Vikings?
That is, yeah, that's according to my assessment of teams. So I'm not just looking at records so far.
Right,
I'm looking
right.
at going forward. So if it's, you know what I mean, you don't want to treat a team that lost a serious, significant players to injury like a, you know, like a,
the
a
Niners.
Good team. Exactly. Like, exactly right. Yeah, that would be a good example. So, yeah, it's all going forward, and my assessment is they have the hardest.
All right, so we'll get to the Niners on Monday night, but first you have a prop bet with Zach Ertz on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, I was going to say before, I guess I'm proving I'm not biased because I'm actually going the under on Zach Ertz. He's at 74.5 receiving yards in this game at minus 110. My projection's 8 targets, 5 catches, 59 yards. And really the key here is, you know, Golden Tate's in the mix. And I think, you know, having the bye week, he'll play a pretty significant role. And I think that's going to cost Ertz some targets here. His target share this season is 28%, which is a massive, massive number, especially for a tight end. Last year he was more in the 21 to 23 range, right around there. That's where I think he'll fall now with Tate in there. I think that's kind of their plan to get Tate involved and keep him happy. Jeffrey will get his. Nelson Aguilar a few targets. The running backs will get a few. Dallas Goedert, you know, you have some mouths to feed here. So, you know, Ertz will still be a fantastic producer, but I think that target share drop is huge. And specifically looking at this number, 74.5, Ertz has been under that two of the past three games and in half of his 8 games this season. Last year he was under in 10 of 17 games. And again, that's with him producing as one of the best tight ends in the NFL. He was still falling under that number. Cowboys actually so far have done a decent job against tight ends as well, 46 yards per game allowed to tight ends. So, yeah, I think he falls a little bit short in this one.
I mean, it's a perfect storm with more options for Wentz and the defense of the Cowboys, as you alluded to.
Yeah, definitely. And the one probably qualm I have here is that, drawback, I suppose, would be that the Cowboys' perimeter corner play has been pretty good, especially Byron Jones. So, you know, if they lock down Tate, who I think will play more on the outside with Aguilar in the slot and Jeffrey out there, if they slow them down a little bit, he might dump it off to Ertz a little bit more than he normally would. That's a little bit of a reservation, but, you know, the Cowboys are, you know, balanced enough, I suppose, with talent defensively that, and they're good. I mean, the Cowboys defense is pretty good, that it should be able to keep the Eagles offense in check to some extent. I think Philly wins this one 23-18. But again, I think the offenses will be held down a little bit. Both teams have good defenses.
And just what the world needs, another primetime game involving the New York Giants. Kai, how do you feel about this, getting to watch your Giants again?
You know what? As a Giants fan, I'm tired of seeing us on primetime. Let us play, like, not even on TV at this point.
It's very annoying. And we get the 49ers again in primetime. No Jimmy G. But we do have Nick Mullins, the second coming of Joe Montana, in this one.
Yeah, the Monday Night Football game, of course. I was going to say, at least there's some star power, right? You have Saquon Barkley, you have Odell Beckham.
I know.
You have Richard Sherman, and you have Nick Mullins, right? Right, he's a superstar now, we've decided. Listen, I'm not crazy. I didn't tweet this during the game last week, but Nick Mullins got away with some stuff, right? He still has a lot to prove. I'm rooting for him. I hope he turns into a star based on his backstory, but there's still a lot to be proven here. It would not surprise me at all if the Giants won this game. In fact, I have it as a wash. I have, like, almost no separation between my point totals for this game, 21-21. And that said, I mean, this is probably related. George Kittle on the under here, 70.5 yards at minus 110. He's been over that mark in 6 of 9 games this season. So that's good, but, you know, you have the question marks at quarterback. I mean, is Nick Mullins going to turn into a pumpkin? I mean, look at last week, Doug. I mean, he had 37 receiving yards on 3 targets, aside of that bizarre 71-yard catch that was thrown into, what, double coverage, and it just happened to slip through, and Kittle was kind of shocked that he had the ball and just ran 71 yards down the field. So, you know, I definitely have reservations about this offense. The Giants have flashed defensively since Olivier Vernon's been back. I think they can definitely keep the Niners offense in check in this one. And by the way, speaking of the Giants defense, there is not a single tight end that has cleared 63 yards against them this season. Again, the line 70.5. No one has cleared 63. And they face Zach Ertz, Jordan Reed, Austin Hooper has taken a step forward this year, and Watson, Austin Seferian Dinkins earlier this season. There's some decent producing tight ends there, and they have shut them down. So definitely going on the under here for George Kittle.
Nerd alert!
I like how you have such thorough projections and breakdown of it all. It makes a lot of sense. I like it. We appreciate the time, Mike. Good stuff. Any other you mentioned that game's a wash, according to your projections, with the Giants and Niners. San Fran is favored by 3, so that's a little different than the Vegas line. Anything else that sort of jumps out in terms of your projections and the Vegas odds?
I think that one really did the most. I have Cleveland probably a little bit closer. I'm going to take them in the points in this one. I have that at 4. I have that at about a 2-point game. Yep. That one I thought was pretty close.
You're not alone there. There's a lot of people I've talked to with power ratings that suggest that.
Yeah, the Colts too. You know, I like them at home against the struggling Jags offense. You know, maybe they can get back on track after the bye. I'm really curious to see if the Jags go back to running the football with Leonard Fournette back. I mean, they have been one of the pass-heaviest offenses in the NFL overall and at the goal line, and I'm wondering if that has to just do with, hey, listen, Fournette's out, we're just going to throw the ball, but they didn't change anything with Carlos Hyde in the lineup their last timeout, so I'm curious about that, but I do have the Colts winning this by a touchdown in the line 3, wow. So that's another one that really jumped out.
Wow, yeah, it's really interesting to see what happens with these teams that look like a mess. Oakland looked like a total mess on Thursday night a week ago. The Jags seem to be a mess as well. It'll be interesting to see how much of that translates on the field or if that was just a isolated situation. Not that the Raiders were only isolated the last Thursday, but that's something you can't really evaluate on the spreadsheet.
Yeah, definitely. That's tough. I mean, when the team just lays a total egg like that, there's really nothing you can do. You know, we're playing the probabilities, and there's always going to be those outliers, and you just have to say, you know what, that's a miss. You know, we're going to have those once in a while. You know what, I'll mention one more, too. How about Tennessee at home hosting the Patriots? Now, remember, we just saw the Patriots play a team that we thought they would handle easily, and it was a one-possession game in the fourth quarter against the Bills. I mean, the Bills were one splash play away from taking the lead against a team that struggled to move the ball. I mean, the Patriots were kicking field goals, could not score touchdowns against that good Bills defense. Well, they're playing the Titans on the road this week. The Titans coming off an impressive bounce-back game against Dallas, who also has a good defense. But the Titans have allowed 14 touchdowns this season. That's lowest in the NFL. They've really been good on that side of the ball. So I'm a little suspect of Tom Brady, whether it's fantasy or prop bets this week, whatever it is, and definitely the Patriots offense. So this is, you know, no respect for the Titans here. 6.5 points. I mean, only 6.5. I have as a 2-point game. So that's another one that surprised me.
Makes sense. The line does seem high, but there is something we call a flat spot in the betting world. And on a short week, big win, teams coming home. It's probably better if, like, Tennessee was favored over a bad team like the Jets or someone along those lines where you can catch them on a flat spot. It's hard to have a flat spot after playing, you know, when you get the Patriots in town, right? You're going to get up for them.
Yeah.
So just yeah, something to consider, yeah, short week. Who knows?
A lot of narratives here, too, right? A lot of connections between these teams. Of course, Malcolm Butler is going to be one of the storylines of the week, the way he struggled, and he's going to have to try and slow down Josh Gordon, obviously Deion Lewis, and, you know, the list goes on and on with the connections between these teams. So, I'm excited for that
one. Yeah, the head coach is friends as well. All right, man, thank you for your time. Appreciate it, and we'll get back with you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Doug.
Talk nerdy to me.
All right, thanks to Mike Clay and also John Murray. A lot of good stuff on the podcast. We'll see what happens with Bonanza moving forward. I've got that sizable lead. Maybe some Twitter plays coming up, and I like that over tonight, and so does Murray, clearly, with the Bonanza play. So all signs point to a shootout tonight. Hopefully the teams cooperate. Thanks to everyone subscribing, downloading, rating, and reviewing. Kai?
Slow and steady, but you got it.
All right. Any confessions of a non-gambler, by the way?
No confessions of a non-gambler as far as terminology this week, but I do, you know, want to know how you feel about Dez getting the job in New Orleans, if that changes anything.
Not really. It doesn't change a ton. I think it's the right situation for him because I think a guy like Sean Payton will maximize it. But in terms of point spread and futures, no, there's no real impact unless, you know, he performs in a way that I'm not anticipating. I'll let you know after the game, but talked to Murray about that earlier in the week and some other odds makers. No real impact there.
So stay tuned.
Saints are still a juggernaut, right? Saints are still a great team with or without Dez, but it's an option and they'll maximize it.
Yeah, looking forward to see what's going to happen. I think Drew Brees has a lot to prove this year as far as to himself and to the rest of the world. So it should be interesting.
All right, man. Well, good stuff from everyone here, and we'll catch you back here next week on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.